Hey
there, Hank. This your girl Dominique LeBlue. I am so glad you are on Anchor. Now I can listen to you while I drive. Anyways, much success. See you around. Bye.
What's good, everybody? You know who it is. It's your boy, Big Take. Hey, and you know what? I'm wild about herbs. Yes, sir. Tonight's episode, we got Gary Constrictus. This fella here, very eclectic. He got some things going on that's wild, you know, by themselves to be able to enjoy in life outside of the reptiles. And he's got a collection that rivals some of the best. We're going to bring him up. We're going to let him give y'all a rundown of how he got into the hobby, who he is as an individual, how important these animals are to him, and how important that they should be to you. So without any further ado, let's bring him back up. Gary, what's going on, man?
Big Tank Hank, man, thanks for having me here, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, no problem, no problem, man. I'm glad that you accepted me, you know, because I enjoy all of these animals in this hobby myself. And being that I have a wife that's not real crazy about these animals in this hobby, I have to live through y'all. So, hey, you make this very important for me, man. Get the people a little, most definitely. Get the people introduction of yourself, a little background, and we're going to dive on in.
All right. Well, my name is Gary, and I'm native Californian. I've been out here my whole life. I live in Northern California now, but I grew up in Southern California. We grew up all over. But, you know, when I was a kid, we used to go to the desert, and we used to catch snakes, and we used to catch tarantulas, and we used to catch, I mean, just if it moved, we wanted it. We wanted it in a cup. We wanted to bring it home. We wanted to try and feed it. We wanted to do all that stuff, right? We wanted to be able to see if we could actually, you know, raise these things. And that was back in the late 70s and the early 80s. You know, and a lot of people had snakes like boa constrictors, but a lot of people back then, they had them for shock value. They had big snakes, and that was kind of the fun thing. That was the shock and awe for me, seeing people with big reptiles, how they kept them. My older sister, she had a reticulated python, 14-foot reticulated python in her apartment, right? And I remember going over there as a kid, and I'd walk by that enclosure, and that thing would strike the glass and scare the living bejeebies out of me. Just like I'm sitting there going, why do you keep this thing? But in the same breath, I'm going, I want one. You know, I'm like, that's the insanity of how my brain works sometimes. Like, it scares the crap out of me, but yet I'm interested in it. And believe it or not, shortly thereafter, my first reptile was a reticulated python. Snuck it into the house as a kid. My mom didn't even know I had it. Put it up in the closet, and I went to school. And the funny thing is, when you go to school and you live at home with your mom and dad, mom still goes in your room and she cleans. And I didn't even think about that, right? So my mom, I come in one day, this is after probably a good week of having the snake hidden in my closet, right? Like, she's deathly afraid of snakes. And I come in, I just see it in her eyes. I mean, white as a ghost. And she's like, what is that in your closet? And you know what? I got it, and she saw me handle it. And she allowed me to keep it. She allowed me to keep that snake. So I got to keep that reticulated python for a couple of years, and I don't remember much about it. I was a kid, and I got into a lot of trouble as a kid. But, you know, I kept reptiles. That's what I've done for a very long time. I mean, my introduction as a young teenager was a reticulated python, and I have managed to keep boa constrictors, and I've managed to keep pythons for the better part of my adult life. I've always loved them. I've always been fascinated by them. I'm going to be very honest in saying, when I was younger, I was probably more interested in the shock and awe portion. You know, you get a large constrictor and you bring it around people. People go, oh my God, you know, and they get scared or they get interested. People tend to get curious, right? And it's an attraction to some people. So there was that reaction that I would look for as a younger person with a large boa constrictor, because I had no idea, right? All I cared about was the attention and having this large constrictor to shock and awe with people. And I did that for a long time. As a matter of fact, we were talking about, earlier, I'm pretty fortunate. You know, I've had snakes for a very long time, and I've been married for, my wife and I've been together for almost 20 years, you know. And in that time that we've been married, I mean, I have heard of people that show up in relationships with reptiles, and the other person may go, hey, wait a minute, you know what? I don't do reptiles. Make a choice. And my wife never did that. She's never owned a reptile, but in the same breath, she's never been she's never had the misconceptions of a reptile. So, as a matter of fact, now she owns lizards. She has tortoises. She has bearded dragons. She has a Euromastix. But she's not really the snake person, but she doesn't mind holding them. But she's been super supportive of my, call it addiction, you know what I mean? I love these animals. I tend to raise them more as babies when I get them. But I have this like coconut I've had for probably a good, probably going on 4 or 5 years now. And he's about 7 years old. He's grown up with me, but he wasn't a baby when I got him. I actually have an 8-foot boa in my room right now that I just got rehomed. This is right where I'm going to is that my wife doesn't say, hey, you got to stop, right? She's been super supportive of me taking in animals, knowing my limitations, the money that I spend, because you know what? I want to give these guys the quality care. And that's something that has changed for me over the years. And that brings me to my story of, I had animals for a long time, and then I just decided, you know what, I'm done. I gave up about 10 years ago. I don't know, I got burned out on the snakes, and my daughter had a child, and my granddaughter was probably 4 or 5 years old, and she comes to me and she goes, hey, Grandpa, Mom told me about all the big snakes that she grew up with, and I want to learn about them. And that just really lit a fire underneath me. Here's this little child, right, that wants to share the same passion with reptiles that I used to have. So what did we do? We went out, we bought a ball python, right? And that what that did was is she enjoyed it. We're enjoying it together. We got to go get some more. We'd end up down at the Serpentarium. We buy some more reptiles. Next thing you know, we went from 1 to 5 to 10 to 12. We've got new rack systems showing up. We've got the whole works going. We got a room full of reptiles now, right? And I'm just learning more because I want to share this with my granddaughter, but I want to share it to her the right way. So I'm learning a lot about proper care now of these animals. It's not just like throw them in an enclosure and give them a branch to climb on with a bowl of water. You know, learning about the proper humidities, learning about the proper heat settings, the gradient heats, the size of the enclosures for these animals, and also giving them the proper time that they need to socialize. These are not just like, if you were to walk into my house right now, you would never know I have a reptile. Never. Because all of my reptiles are in a room by themselves. And I do that because I don't want people walking through the room to stress them out. So they're in a nice room with very nice enclosures, and I go in there and I socialize with them and I bring them out. But to me, the care of these animals is my passion, right? It's like I live for these animals. I live to educate people on these animals now. It's a big, big, important thing for me. I'm a member of USARC, which is the United States Association of Reptile Keepers. And honestly, I really didn't know about USARC until a few years ago, maybe a couple of years ago. And, thank God for social media. Social media was, you'd see a blip about USARC, but it was just enough for me to go, what is this USARC thing? And anything that's got the word reptile in it, it's got my attention. I'm sold. I'll check it out. And I found out that the United States Association of Reptile Keepers was an organization that was fighting for my rights to keep these animals. And what they would do is that they would find laws that were being passed in states and make people like me aware of them. You know, whereas if I didn't have USARC, I wouldn't have any knowledge of it. I would not know that, you know, people are trying to pass laws about these animals. And really what it boils down to is the misconceptions and fears that people have. But regardless, you know, to that, USARC is now informing me of what's happening with reptiles. And you know what? There's something I can do about it. And they make it so simple for me to be a part of USARC. So the welfare of these animals is, like I said, it is the utmost important thing for me. So I do whatever I can for USARC. My wife is a USARC member. I'm a silver member, which... it's just an upgraded membership. We have the Lacey Act that's going on right now. And, you know, I'm doing everything I can to help educate people on the Lacey Act and how it doesn't just affect our reptiles, but it affects fish. It affects parrots. It affects, you know, any exotic animal other than a cat, dog, or a barn animal. So what I've been doing right now with a lot of my time is I create videos for USARC, and it's not endorsed by USARC. USARC doesn't give me pats on the back and say, hey, thanks for all the good work. But what it does is it fills me. It gives me that good feeling that maybe we're doing something for somebody else. Somebody like me, like I was a couple of years ago, who heard of USARC but really didn't know what USARC was. But now we're putting videos out and we're kind of giving explanations of how you can help USARC. What does USARC do for you? What does it mean to be a responsible reptile keeper? How can you help? All these little nuggets that we're feeding to people, and we're just kind of hoping if we can reach one person, two persons, and it would be an amazing thing, because it'll spread like wildfire eventually. For me, what it boils down to is that there's 9 million homes in America with a reptile in it, and most of those homes have two reptiles. So USARC does not have 9 million members. So the goal is to just keep working, get it out there, let people know about USARC, and eventually, hopefully, the misconception of these animals will slowly fade, and people may not be as afraid of them as we are. You know, reptile keepers, we are in the corner of the reptile, of the pet world, I should say, right? Like, you got cat dogs, you got cat owners, you got dog owners, you got, you know, all these other types of...
Bro,
you know,
there you go.
Oh, there, good?
There we go.
Okay.
You good.
But you've got all these types of different types of animal owners, and then you've got the reptile owners. And the reptile owners, we've got this cloud over us because people are afraid of the animals that we have. So it's one of the things that I strive for is to educate and show people that, you know what, these animals are just as gentle, just as loving, and just as fulfilling as a domesticated house cat. You know what I mean? So that's a lot of what I do. You know, I get to help USARC. I get to help people learn about USARC. And I'll share a little tidbit. We're doing a video right now. And I was very fortunate enough to have Garrett Hartle from Reach Out Reptiles send me a video to include in the video that we're doing. And if anybody knows, Garrett is like, he is a staple in the reptile industry. Reach Out Reptiles is, to me, they are the pinnacle of responsible reptile keeping. Because when we talk about reptile keeping and responsible reptile keeping, I think a lot of people venture to how what we do in our own homes with our animals, how do we keep them, that kind of thing. But when we think about people who are taking species of animals and breeding them to keep the genes alive and in existence for someone like me to have, that I think is where responsible reptile keeping starts. And Reach Out Reptiles has been the staple of the super dwarf world. I have quite a few super dwarf retics, so I mean, I kind of look past the individual and home style of responsible reptile keeping. It's really the breeders that allow us to have these animals in our home. That's where it starts, right? That's where it starts. But yeah, I mean, I'm passionate. I'm super passionate about my animals. I love them. I mean, I would... I would do anything for my snakes. I really would. They give me so much fulfillment and just so much love. Yeah, that's where I'm at with my animals.
Man, that's really cool. And I'm glad that I picked you. I had no idea that you had all of this knowledge, this side of the hobby and the passion that you have. And for this to be at the beginning of me starting this set of streams, you know, people will be able to, you know, if they're going to go down the playlist, you know, they'll be able to hear you amongst the first, you know what I'm saying, in order to beat that home, man, about the USARC and the importance of staying current on the laws and regulations that they're trying to slide in underneath, you know, the doorway on us. Man, that's commendable. Quite a bit, man. Salute.
Thank you. I'm very, very passionate. Very passionate about my animals and the Lacey Act. You know, we're working on it. I think the Lacey Act was kind of like you get this little kid, right? That's shopping in the supermarket with the parents, and they throw a candy bar in the middle of the basket, and then they pile all the other goodies on top, right? They don't see that candy bar in there until they get to the checkout. That's kind of what they did with the Lacey Act. They made all these amendments to the Lacey Act and threw it right in the middle of this 3,000-page document. And I think, you know, if you're any typical human being reading 3,000 pages, by the time you get to the Lacey Act, you're like, whatever, just pay for it. You can have it now, you know? And that doesn't benefit us. That doesn't benefit, you know, any exotic animal keeper, right? Not just us. You know, it affects a lot of people. So you know, I make it a point to let people know, even, you know, going to Petco, things like that. And I'll bring flyers into Petco and pet stores and just see, can we put these here? Let people know about USARC. Let them know that we need your support.
Good deal. So what, individually, what are all of the reptiles that you have?
So personally myself, I own 4 super dwarf retics. Actually, I own 5 because I got that kind of a personality. I've got a very, very good, we'll call it a connection, right? This is one of the things I love about this hobby is that we make connections. We meet people, we buy our animals from them. And I've bought quite a few animals from quite a few different people, but we get that one person where we buy an animal from and it becomes more than just a purchase. It becomes a relationship. It becomes communication. It becomes, you know, this guy breeds animals, but he owns snakes just like I do. So we send text messages back and forth and a lot of good feeling kind of stuff, right? So when I go and want another animal and he's got it, I go to him first because he gave me a very quality animal. And so I've done that now with Chris McVicker from New Shed Serpents. I've bought 3 super dwarf reticulated pythons from him. And it's not just because he's got quality animals, because he's a quality person. So this is the relationships that I get to build, you know, through buying animals. And you know, I'm on social media with Chris and I'll see him post something on his Instagram page. And I'm like, ooh, what is that? And he says, oh, that's a female super dwarf, 75% Kalatoa, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I need to have that, you know? So, and he feeds me the information on it. And then because I've already purchased from Chris, because I know Chris is a really good guy, I know I'm going to get a quality animal. So why not stick with him and what he has? So these are the relationships that I get to get. So anyways, my 5th super dwarf retic is a 68% Kalatoa, which is a small island off of the Indonesian islands. It's a dwarf locality, super dwarf reticulated python. They'll probably get about 12 feet long total, which is very manageable, right? Like I do not want to own a 20-foot reticulated python. So I have the best of both worlds. I have this wonderful reticulated python that won't get over 12 feet long or shouldn't get over 12 feet long. It'll all be in the genes. So I've got 5 super dwarf retics. I've got 2 true red tail boas. We talk about red tail boas this is not a red tail boa. Just to let everybody know, this is a boa imperator. He's a morph, but he's not a red tail boa. He is a boa imperator. But I do have a Suriname boa constrictor, which is a true red tail boa. And I also have a Guyana red tail boa constrictor, which is a true red tail boa. And those guys are just amazing. They've got beautiful tails on them. They're all over my Instagram page. If you want to check that out, that's Gary's Constrictors. I also have a Hypo Jungle boa constrictor that is, she's 3 years old now. I got her when she was like probably 8 inches long, and she's almost as big as Coconut is. It's just been a joy to watch this animal grow up from a baby, right? And so the BCCs, I have a Hog Island boa constrictor, Matilda. All of these animals, I've had them since they were babies, so I'm growing them up. It's been just a beautiful, beautiful journey to watch them grow up from these little boa constrictors to now they're like sub-adults. And they've got great personalities. They know who I am. I really don't care what anybody says about that. I believe that my snakes know who I am. But I've got four locality boa constrictors, which is my Guyana, my Suriname. I have my Hog Island boa constrictor. I have an Argentine boa constrictor. And then I have my Call Albino. I have a Dumero's boa constrictor, which is from Madagascar. Not originally from Madagascar, born in the United States, but it's great, great snake. And then, of course, I've got all of my super dwarf retics. We've got a Euromastix. We've got a bearded dragon. We've got a gecko. We've got two African sulcata tortoises. We've got a redfoot tortoise. We've got a Russian tortoise. And I think that might be all the reptiles we have. We've got 5 acres here. So we've also got horses. We've got goats. We've got two 800-pound Hampshire pigs out here. We've got a farm. We've got a zoo here. I've actually had people show up on my property because of my pig, and they saw the pigs, and I'm like, who are you guys? And they're like, oh, we just saw the pigs. We want to check them out. You know, so it's kind of, you know, we live off the beaten path. So it's kind of an interesting thing when you've got somebody you don't know at your property checking your pigs out.
Right.
But that's my wife's thing. She loves animals, and she does not get in the way. She doesn't tell me I can't do this. And when she wants a horse or she wants a pig or she wants something, she can have it. You know, that's her passion. She loves animals. I often say that I think my wife was like God's gift to animals, right? Because she's so loving and she's so understanding. And sometimes it's out here raining, right? And we'll be sitting here and she'd be like, you know, I wish I could buy a raincoat for every animal out there in the rain right now. I'm like, honey, they're supposed to be out there. That's what they live for. She goes, no, I wish they had raincoats, you know, but that's her heart, right? That's her heart speaking. And she just loves animals. So we've got a lot of different types of animals here, but the reptiles, we've got a plethora of reptiles. I've actually had people message me on my social media and say, hey, I don't know you, but I've got kids and I live in your area. Can we come check out your snakes? I'm like, sure, why not? Come on out, you know? So I'm given a two-hour tour of my property, of my animals, with people I don't know, and then built relationships, you know? So these animals have been nothing but positive for me. Absolutely nothing but positive.
Gotcha. Sounds like it, man. I'm a little envious. What does a day of feeding look like?
Well, it's funny. I just had this conversation with a friend of mine today. And when I tell them that Coconut, for instance, Coconut eats once a month. And they're like, you gotta be kidding me. Snakes are the most, they're the easiest maintainable animals, in my opinion, to own. The larger boa constrictors, they eat once a month. My smaller boa constrictors, they eat every 2 weeks. And I've got two snakes now that are, you know, they're eating every 3 weeks. So, but I'll tell you what, on that fourth week when everybody is eating, it's a bucket of rats. It is a full bucket of rats going around. And I'll tell you, it can be quite comical because I've told you I'm in a band, and sometimes I go out on tour. I can be gone for up to 20 some odd days at a time. And in that time frame, my wife, the animal lover, she's got to feed the snakes. So imagine this woman who is, she's almost in tears because the squirrels and the rabbits don't have raincoats outside. Now she's unthawing dead rats to feed the snakes. And I've got my YouTube channel. It's called Constricted and Addicted. Check it out if you'd like to check it out. But, and I got videos, right, of before I went on tour last year, of training my wife how to feed the snakes properly because I was going to be gone for a while. And I got some amazing footage of her doing this. And it's just super comical, super cute. She's sitting there with the rat going, "Oh, you poor soul." And she didn't know I was right behind her with the camera while she was playing with the rat, you know? So it is hilarious to watch because, again, my wife has just got such a kind heart. She's a beautiful soul. And now she's feeding dead rats to live snakes. It's, you know, in her world, that's not the most favorite thing for her to do, but she would do it for me, and she's done it for me. And it's kind of funny because we're on tour and I'm getting phone calls and she's like, I did it. Did I do it right? And it's like, did you get bit? She goes, no, I didn't get bit. I said, then you did it right. But yeah, the feeding around here is, it's not like what people think. It's the bigger the snake is, the less they eat. It's just they get a bigger meal once a month.
That's cool. For real. So how do you, because I know a lot of people I've talked to that raise their own rats. Where do you get yours from?
I have a friend of mine out here that she breeds them.
Okay.
So I have it very, very good. I pay absolutely nothing for my breeder, my feeders, nothing. I let her know, hey, I need about, 15 of these and 4 of these and 20 of these. And she wraps them all up in a container and brings them to me. And I say, how much do I owe you? She goes, just PayPal me whatever you want, you know? And I've gone to the store and done the same thing and it's cost me $200. Mm. So, you know, I don't take advantage of it, that's for sure. She's been super good to me, but she's a really good friend of mine too. We wheel and deal snakes back and forth, and we're just really good friends. So I make sure that when she brings me the rats that I need, that she's taken care of, because trust me, if I didn't have that avenue, I've done videos on what it costs me to feed these snakes per year, and it would be a hell of a lot more than what it is. It really would be. So, Herpnasium, thank you so much for helping me out. I love you. You're a great person. Thanks.
Herpnasium. Is Herpnasium on Instagram?
She sure is. She sure is.
And you mentioned
the page out. She's got lots of amazing snakes for sale, too.
Gotcha. You mentioned being in a band.
That's right.
Give a little insight on that. Plug your band. We need to name the whole night.
So I am in a band called Niviane, N-I-V-I-A-N-E. We are out of Sacramento, California, and we are a power metal band. And people ask, what is a power metal band? And what I like to say is, we're not a Cookie Monster band. We're not that band that goes, you know, I like to say, if Iron Maiden and Queensryche had a baby, it'd be Niviane, right? We are melodic. I'm a shredder guitar player. My brother Mark, he's a shredder guitar player. We come together with two parts. It sounds like one. We just really, we have a love, the same love for the music as I have for my animals, right? And it's been something I've been doing. I started playing guitar when I was 9 years old. You know, and I had a lot of trials and tribulations, right? Like, and I'll share this, my life is an open book. I started using drugs when I was in my probably 9 years old, right? And I got clean when I was 28. And coming up this year in August, I'll have 24 years clean. So a lot of things happened late in life for me, right? Like, I wish that I could have done some of the things earlier in life, but you know what? Life is what it is. And I'm doing what I'm doing now, and I have no regrets. But, you know, I didn't get into my first band until I was in my early 40s. Actually, my late 30s. I was 38 years old when I got into my first band. I'm 52 now. So, you know, I was doing covers, and I got into this original band called Nevaeh, and I didn't think I was good enough for it. And it turns out that I was, and I've been in the band now for going on 6 years. In 6 years, we've put out 2 albums. We've toured Canada. We've toured the United States twice. We were supposed to go to Europe before COVID hit, and we're on our 3rd album right now. We are recording our 3rd album, and I'm praying, right? Like this is 2023 is going to be our year. We're not a big band, right? We're not like Iron Maiden. We went out on tour with Soulfly, right? So we've been out on tour with big bands. We've opened for Amon Amarth. We've opened for Testament. We've even opened for Warrant, for those of you who know Warrant, right? So Military Morphs, awesome. Anyways, so we've done a lot, but we're like in Sacramento. If you come to Northern California, people have heard of us. You take us out of California, nobody knows who we are. We're just another band on tour. So, you know, if that's what I got from this whole adventure, I'd be perfectly okay with it, you know, because I'm doing what I love to do. How many people can say that they've toured 24,000 miles since 2018, been to almost every state in the United States, traveled from Canada all the way over to Edmonton, come back down. I've got stories to tell about going into the Canadian border because of my criminal history, and then the point of not wanting to let me in, right? So I've been able to get past that. And as a matter of fact, one of the bounties when I went through in, I think it was in Washington, had said, we're gonna let you in because we know you're coming back out. All right, that's cool. I can live with that, right? So anyways, I love my music. I love my band. It's one of the most important things in my life. I'm an estimator by the day. You know, that's what I do. I've been in the electrical trade for over 20 plus years. And my boss is very forgiving of my tour schedule. The other thing is that I get to work from the road. So if I go out on tour, I take my job with me. And I get to work while I'm on the tour bus. So when I go to my boss and say, hey, I'm going to be gone for the month of August, he doesn't even flinch an eye at it because he knows that I'm going to get my work done. And then I get to go out and I get to, you know, tour, meet people, go to different places, you know, play the music that I love to play. And, you know, who knows what happens? You know, at the end of the day, I come home and this is it, you know. But there might be that chance that something happens, something breaks, and I can quit my job and I can tour 6 months out of the year and live the dream. And even if I don't get to do that, I'm living the dream anyways. So, yeah, you know, I love what I do. I've been in the band, like I said, for about 6 years, and I get to play the music that I want to play. I'm not playing somebody else's music. I'm not playing music the very first song that I ever wrote, I wrote in this band, and it's on our 1st album. And that feeling, right, when you write a song and you go somewhere, and like in California or Nevada, we play a lot, and you go and play and you hear the audience, they're singing your song.
You're like,
yeah, you're like, wow, no way. You know, you're sitting there, and then it just drives you to get into what you're doing. So, and the beauty, another thing is right, like a lot of our fans, they know I have snakes. So they're all asking me, hey man, when are you going to bring a snake on tour? When are you going to come out? And it's like, it's always there, that thought, right? Like bringing one of the snakes out with me. But I think it'd be too stressful personally.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there might be a photo shoot coming up and a video that we're going to do that will have my snakes in it.
Good deal, man. That's real cool. I can kind of identify with the, you know, hearing the crowd singing your song, you know, like, man, that's my song. Well, I have my little intro I do on here, and I had a couple of what we would call big, you know, big YouTubers. I approached them about coming on, you know, and they accepted, and then for them to do my intro, like, you know, and I'm like, and this, I haven't like sent a link, you know, to say, hey, look at my videos or whatever, but showing me that they've seen him, you know, and I'm like, man, you actually know my intro. Okay.
It's good stuff, man.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
I've got a lot of love for not just the big guys in the industry, but, you know, anybody anybody in the industry, because sometimes I feel like we're doing an uphill battle here. You know, people are always going to be afraid of reptiles. And when you've got people that are in it with you and they are like activists, I guess you would call it, you know, I don't know if that's a proper word to use, but they're doing the same thing. They're fighting for your rights, right? Yeah. And these people are like, they're like my heroes, you know, the Garrett Hartles and the Chris McVickers and the Brian Barchecks and all these guys that are, you know, they would basically do whatever they could to help me keep my animal in my possession, you know, and be free to travel with my animal wherever I want. Those are my heroes.
Good deal. Have you ever owned fish?
I have. So as a matter of fact, as a younger Gary, I used to have a 100-gallon African cichlid tank.
Okay.
And my African cichlids were amazing fish. But I told you a story. As a younger Gary, I was not the very smartest person in the world and made a lot of bad choices. And then I tried again to get into the African cichlids, and you know, they just wasn't as fulfilling for me the second time around. And so I went to South American cichlids. And then I woke up one morning with a 100-gallon fish tank and 80 gallons of water all over my floor.
Oh.
So word to the wise, if you own fish, make sure you've got a backup plan, because I didn't. You know, you take for granted that you've got this 100-gallon fish tank and it's been holding water for the better part of 15 years, and all of a sudden that one day it springs a leak at the bottom and it's got water all over the place. To be completely honest, because that's the way I like to be, I got so tired of taking care of that fish tank. I mean, there was like every Saturday you're just doing a major overhaul on the tank. You're taking the rocks out, you're washing everything down, you're putting it back in, and the tank looks great for another 3 weeks, and then you start, it's just another process. And I got to this point where it's like, oh god, I wish I didn't have to do this anymore. And then this is kind of funny, but it's not funny, the fish were rehomed. So I got up, there's 80 gallons of water all over my floor. I'm freaking out for the fish because I don't have any place to put them. So I get them in buckets and I rush them down to a pet store. It's actually three cities away. They said they would take them. So I got them over there, got everything cleaned up, got the fish tank. We rehomed the fish tank to a friend of mine. He was going to fix it and put fish in it. I was like, finally got everything out of there. We've got this big open area now in our living room. And my wife and I looked at each other and said, now we don't have to take care of it. We were kind of joking to each other, but we said it at the same time, which was made it even funnier, right? Because we both were thinking that, and I didn't know that she was thinking the same thing I was.
No, that's funny.
They're chore. Anybody who takes care of fish, my hats are off to you, because that is a commitment. It really is, especially saltwater tanks. I think they require, I've never owned one, but I know friends that have, and they just seem to be a major commitment in cleaning. They really are.
Yeah, no, they definitely are. They definitely are. You have to find your, you know, you have things that you can do now where, you know, you put your checks and balances in order when it comes to your bio load and your beneficial bacteria, and you take away a lot of that work when you can fine tune all of that other stuff. But and then you just have to really worry about your water changes. But yeah, it's definitely work to get to that point. But yeah. Hey, have you ever thought about breeding reptiles?
Well, simple answer is no, I haven't. But I do have my friend Herpnasium, Leanne, and inadvertently she has all the males and females to my males and females. So the plan is at some point that maybe we will, I'll let her take my females, breed them and bring them back. And I have really no interest in any more snakes. I am at a comfortable level now where the time that I can give to my animals is equal. I don't sit, there was a time where I had so many animals, I felt bad. because I wasn't able to devote time, or maybe this snake over here has been sitting for a week and hasn't had any attention. And literally what I do when I get home from work is I handle three or four snakes each night, sit at home with my wife, we'll watch TV, and while we're watching TV, I'll put out three or four snakes, handle them, cycle them through, and right now I'm at that count where none of my snakes are not handled within a, say, 36-hour, 48-hour time period. So, and I'm comfortable with that. So the amount of snakes that I have right now, I have no interest in breeding and bringing in other snakes. The only interest I have is the animals I have and raising them and having giving them the proper care. Now, like I said, if I do decide to breed with Leanne's animals, she'll keep all the animals. She can make all the money. I really don't care about that. It'd be kind of neat to see the morphs that could come out of that. But realistically, I'm perfectly content with what I have.
Hey, you do that, you're going to end up with one more at least.
I would not doubt that. I can see that. I picture that. Right? I got to have at least one.
Look at that color. Oh, my goodness. Did you have a process in choosing the animals that you have?
Well, it's just really about addiction, I guess. No. As I get older, and I interact more with my snakes, there is kind of like this, not a process so much, but like I'm favoring the super dwarf reticulated python. Reticulated pythons, now for me, they just seem more personable. Now, I've had Coconut out for going on a couple of hours now, and it'd be very hard for me to argue that Coconut is not a personable animal. You can see him, he's just kind of laying on me. He's just very, very relaxed and nothing's bothering him. So to me, that's a personable animal. But for me, it's like the reticulated python. When I walk into my reptile room, I have one of my super dwarfs that will come to the glass, not because she thinks that she's getting fed, but she's just making it known that she wants me to get her out. And, you know, the boas really don't do that so much. The boas are more of a, you can come get me. You know, I'm sociable, but, you know, I'm not going to look for it. My retics, on the other hand, they almost look for that socialization. So the funny thing is when you get them out, it's very difficult to get them back in. I mean, it's like almost fighting with them to get them back in. They know that you're going in the reptile room, and the next thing you know, they go straight for my neck, and they wrap, because it's very difficult to get them off my neck. So once I get them off my neck, and then I try to get them into their enclosure, they're trying to dart back towards me. And I simply equate that as, wow, they want to hang out with me.
They don't want to go back in there.
The boa constrictors, on the other hand, I put them in there. They don't care. They just go back to what they're doing. So I'm really favoring the reticulated python, and I'm really favoring the super dwarf reticulated python, because, like I said, here we are with this animal 20 plus years ago that nobody ever imagined. Nobody ever imagined owning a reticulated python that wouldn't get 20 feet long. And reticulated pythons are amazing, amazing animals, but there's a few select people that are ready to really handle a 20-foot snake when they're full grown, right? And I'll be the first person to honestly admit, I want nothing to do with a 20-foot snake. I mean, I look at myself when I'm 70 years old, what the hell am I gonna do with a 20-foot snake, right? But a 10-foot snake, a 12-foot snake, that's a little bit more manageable. Here's another thing, is that the reticulated pythons, we all see these massive 300-pound, 21, 22-foot reticulated pythons that people are just power feeding, right? I have an 8-foot snake that weighs less than this snake right here. And it's because I don't overfeed her. She's 8 feet long and she's big, but she's very manageable. And I mean, I think that's another part of responsible reptile keeping is that I don't want my snakes to be overweight, obese, and they're just like human beings. They can have health issues. They can experience heart disease. They can experience, you know, just the same common problems that a human being has when we're overweight. So as the keeper, it's my responsibility to make sure that I'm not overfeeding the snake, that I'm taking care of it properly. So that's the fun thing about the reticulated python and the super dwarf is that you feed them much less, they don't grow as fast, and they don't get as girthy as a mainland reticulated python. So they're so much more manageable. I mean, you can have a 10-foot snake that's, I mean, you don't need two people to handle it. So that's one of the reasons I'm really drawn towards that super dwarf green tick. They're just, their size, they're manageable, they're very, very personable. And it's not just me. I see people on social media that they buy a super dwarf reticulated python from, say, Reach Out Reptiles or Underbelly Exotics, right? And now they're interacting with them the same way that I see myself interacting with my super dwarf reed ticks. And I know it's not me. I know it's the animal. The animals are pretty much the same. They're very personable. They're very interactive. And they're just inquisitive as all get, right? So that to me is, I love. As a matter of fact, if I could, I would have had this one of the super dwarfs out. But it had been all over the place. It had been trying to get, like, as far as it could, trying to hold on. That's just their personality. They love to go. They're very active animals. So, and now Coconut's trying to wrap himself around the back of my chair. So, but yeah, that's my choosing. You know, I if I see something that's got a high percentage of a super dwarf gene, that's going to grab my attention.
Gotcha.
Your thoughts on blood pythons, because I've heard, you know, heard things about them, and I want to know what you think.
Well, blood pythons, I've never owned one, so I know people that have them, and I've heard things about them, but I've seen people own the people that do own them, and I've never seen the myth, right? Like the misconception, quote unquote, that they're bitey and that they're mean, and that's what I've heard. They're not very tameable. But then I see people that own them and they're handling them. They're handling them like I handle my boa constrictors. So I think really it boils down to the keeper. I think that any animal can be socialized if you give it time. Any animal. I had one of my super dwarf retics when I got it was striking at everything. It tried to bite me, it tried to bite my wife. It did bite me on the thumb. And I worked with this snake every day for 15 minutes it took about 4 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. And I was suited up in a leather denim jacket, big gloves, holding this snake, right? Because I didn't want to get bit. And every time I'd have it out, I wanted to put her back and just make sure that we had a positive experience. 15 minutes, that's all I was asking for, 15 minutes. Every day I'd go and I'd hold her for 15 minutes and put her back. And next thing you know, I got to take the jacket off and she wasn't trying to bite me. Next thing you know, I took the gloves off. I got her out, she wasn't trying to bite me. Next thing you know, she's crawling up on my shoulder, she's crawling on my face, she's going around my head, she's tangling up in my hair. She's not trying to bite me. Now, she's one of those animals that comes to the glass and is like, hey dad, come get me out. I want out of here. You're in the room, come get me. This is an animal that wanted to kill me when I first got it. And she's my best friend. So I am a firm believer that everything is within the keeper. And I mean, maybe there are those animals that aren't tameable. Maybe they're just built that way. But my experience is that if you work with the animal and you work with it enough, eventually you can tame it down. You can socialize it.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, I got a question that's just off the beaten path. Your favorite guilty snack pleasure?
Oh boy. Cookies and cream ice cream, man. So here's a little story, and it's kind of a, you know, kind of least of that is that I used to weigh 264 pounds. I was a big guy, right? Like I ate everything in sight. I'd go to the fast food restaurant. I go to the all-you-can-eat buffets. I take my family to the all-you-can-eat buffets. And if it was like $70 for all of us to eat, I had to eat $70 worth of food to make sure that we got our money's worth, right? And every time, you could roll me out of that place, right? And people were picking on me, man. They were saying things like, I don't know if you know what it's like when I was a kid, right? And they were playing soccer, right? And they were picking all the kids for the soccer team, but I was always one of the last two left behind, right? Like, and me and the other kid are looking at each other, who are they gonna pick? They're gonna pick you or they're gonna pick me, right? We were never picked first, right? So here I am now, I'm an adult, I weigh all this weight, and I got people picking on me, right? Like, hey man, what do you do? How far along are you? And I'm feeling like that kid on the soccer field, right? Like, I'm laughing along, because I don't want nobody to know that they're hurting my feelings. I want to laugh along with everybody, right? Well, what happened was, is I ended up going to work in another place, and I ended up going down with an engineer who was a cyclist. And he like put this little bug in my ear. He says, hey man, if you go down to that gym down there and tell them you're from out of town, it's $15 a day. And I was like, what are you trying to tell me? I'm fat or something? So the next day I found myself at 4:30 in the morning sneaking down to that gym. And I found out that if I paid for the whole week in advance, it was $15 a week. So I paid for the whole week in advance, and I treated that gym just like I treated the fast food and the all-you-can-eat buffets. I was there. I was there when I wasn't working. We would go to work. We were paid per diem. These guys were ordering these big old steak cheeseburgers and French fries, and I had a chicken salad in front of me. And I wanted the French fries, and I wanted the big cheese, whatever good looking thing that they were eating, right? And I was disciplining, and I wanted to lose weight more than I wanted to eat that food. And within a year, I went from 264 to 169. And that was in 2012. And since 2012 to now, I've maintained my weight between 175, 180. And I've really been strict about what I eat. So when it comes to the guilty pleasure, man, it's, and my wife knows this, she'll go, guess what I got you? I'm like, what? She goes, cookies and cream. I'm like, oh God, all right. So yeah, cookies and cream ice cream, man. You want to make a friend? Cookies and cream ice cream is all it takes.
Yeah, I think that's my favorite flavor also. In our reality. Yeah, I used to be that gym guy. I mean, I was never little. I was big on purpose. I mean,
big.
Yeah, I was big on purpose. I've been up to 330 pounds when I was, but I'm 50 now. When I was from 30 to maybe 33, yeah, I was like 330 pounds. Got down, did intermittent fasting, got down to about 230. And see, 230 for me was like, people question, like, man, are you okay? Are you, you know? Yeah, I couldn't. If I was smaller than that, that would have been a problem. So that was little for me. But I bounced back up, where I hover between 240 and 250 now. And I'm thinking about getting myself back to about 230. You know, that'll be a good weight for a 50-year-old man with my structure. I still hold quite a bit of muscle, which is a good thing. But yeah, man, that cookies and cream is a wonderful thing. Now, we're at 52 minutes, so we're going to have to take the plane on in. But is there anything that you want to round this off with?
You know, if there's anything I would like to round off, and I've talked a lot about it, it's support USARC. You know, USARC is our voice. And it's really, if we take a look at the Lacey Act and the things that are happening with the Lacey Act, again, it doesn't just affect reptiles. And we are the United States Association of Reptile Keepers. But, you know, if more people become aware of USARC and the work that's being done by USARC, the laws that are happening, we become more aware of it. We can fight them. We can go to bat. We can stand with USARC, and we can let these lawmakers know. And it takes responsible reptile keeping, right? It doesn't take social media and that shock and awe effect of people, you know, what I've seen some crazy things done on social media with reptiles and that kind of stuff, to me, that's just got to stop. We got to be able to put these animals in a positive light and show people that, you know what, They're beautiful animals. They belong in our homes. And to me, they are just as important as any cat or any dog. And I've got cats and dogs. So I speak my truth when I say that reptiles are, in my opinion, they make great pets. But like I said, we're on this little island over here, right? Because people have misconceptions and fears about reptiles. And we're always gonna be on that island, but we can make that island bigger the more that we grow and the more that we let people know about US Ark and the more that we put these animals in a positive light and just show people, you know what? They're beautiful, they're wonderful, they're powerful, and they're graceful. And just walk through your fears, walk through those misconceptions, and support US Ark.
Most definitely. Hey, you're gonna make me put US Ark somewhere in the title of this, you know, attach it to you, because this video has become, I'm telling you, at this point, this has become a testimonial. And I think I'm gonna tag it somewhere in there, so you know, people will know, hey, check it out. Even if you're somewhere looking at something else, you know, and listen to this gentleman talk about and show his passion in regards to preserving the reptile side of this hobby, as well as all exotic animals. Now, y'all, anybody that's checking out this video, I thank you for sitting down and spending this time with us. You know that there's also a podcast that I have, as you see on the ticker down there below. For anybody interested in being on my fish stream or my reptile stream, my email is also down there. For anybody checking out the replays later on, thank you for coming through and showing a little time. This has been Big Tank Hank and Gary's Constrictors. And we love y'all. Take care of those animals. Tell somebody you love them. And we out.
Peace.